Welcome to Biblical Higher Ed Talk, where we tap into the wisdom of leaders and practitioners of biblical higher education for the advancement of colleges and universities teaching the way of Christ in the modern world. Each week, we'll tackle topics around leading your organization, expanding your impact in the world, and deepening your faith through Christ-centered conversations. Ready to make a difference in the lives of your faculty, staff, and students? Then let's begin our journey.
Today on Biblical Higher Ed Talk, I sit down with David Ashcraft, CEO and President of the Global Leadership Network, to discuss the state of ministry preparation and leadership training for the church. What are we getting right, and what needs to change? Thank you for tuning in today. I'm your host, Philip Dearborn, President of ABHE. And we are honored to have as our guest this week, David Ashcraft. David serves as the CEO and president of the Global Leadership Network. And GLN's mission is to see leaders inspired and equipped so they can lead transformation in their communities and around the world. Many of you may be familiar with GLN through their annual Global Leadership Summit. Before his work with GLN, David was a senior pastor for many years at LCBC Church in central Pennsylvania. And I can say this, that I'm proud that he's my senior pastor, and we had the privilege of being able to serve together for many years as I worked on the elder board and David was the pastor. So David, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Phil. And I don't know if I'm allowed to call you Phil. That's what, because of our history together, I would always think of you as Phil. I could call you Dr. Phil. I could call you Dr. Philip. I could call you Dr. Dearborn. But Phil is who you are to me.
Phil, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But glad that you've been able to join us. And I've invited David to talk about the state of ministry preparation, specifically for leadership in the church context. So really looking forward to this conversation. But before we dive into that, David, just so the audience can get to know you a little bit more, tell us one instance in your life that God used to kind of propel you forward in either your personal or your professional life.
Yeah. So Phil, it's interesting, my background, I've been a pastor for almost 40 years now. And my father was a pastor. So as I was growing up as a kid, people would always tell me that I was going to follow in my dad's footsteps and be a pastor. And I hated them telling me that. I loved what my dad did, appreciated him very much, but I didn't like people telling me what I was going to be. And I guess there's a stubborn streak there. So I was very determined not to be a pastor. And I went off to school, Texas Tech University. I studied business. I thought I was going to go to law school. And wasn't until my senior year at Tech that God turned my heart, began to cause me to think about more education in theology and Bible. So I went to Dallas Theological Seminary. And if I think through things that were influential for me, I mean, there were a lot of little steps along the way, but there are a couple conversations, one very specific one that comes to mind, where Ruth and I, my wife, were standing in a potluck line on a Wednesday night at our church. This is 40 years ago. So back when we had Wednesday night prayer meetings at our church on Wednesday night, we would have potluck dinners before the prayer time. And so I'm standing in line waiting for my potluck meal. And Jim Cutnow, one of the pastors in our church, just happened to come over to me, starts engaging me in conversation. And somewhere along the way, he just said, you know, you really ought to think about teaching and preaching. And I was teaching a young adult Sunday school class then. And apparently he had heard me teach, and he said, you really ought to think about teaching and preaching. I think you really have a gift and an aptitude for that. And it just, I can remember that conversation, feel like it was today or like it was yesterday, where I don't know that I'd ever given that thought so much. And it made an impact on me that just began to open my eyes to say, okay, maybe I can do more than I think I can. And maybe I need to give myself experiences to be able to test his thoughts and see if that's really true or not. And so real impactful. And the funny thing is, my parents are both gone now. They both passed. But I repeated that conversation to them, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago. And they both were somewhat incredulous and said, well, we've told you that for years before Jim told you that. But it's one of those things where, you know, your parents can tell you something, but somebody else that has influence beyond your parents, it made a big difference in my life. So that was really a turning point for me, and even just what I thought potentially for me in the future.
Yeah, and set up an amazing trajectory for you for ministry, for camp ministry, and then ultimately church ministry. Did Jim know that impact that he had on your life?
You know, that's a good question. And he's still alive. He ended up leaving and going to be, he actually taught in a college in Italy for years. He's back in the United States now. And so I don't know. And one other quick conversation that I'll just tell you about. At Dallas Seminary, you had to have 3 years of Greek and 2 years of Hebrews of studies. And so I'm in my second year of Greek, first year of Hebrew, and I'm about to bail out and thinking, I can't do this. This isn't me. I'm not cut out for this. And so a family friend, Dr. Charles Ryrie, was, they were just good friends with our family. And so I remember going over to his house late one night and saying, I'm done. I can't do this. I'm not cut out for it. And I need to bail out. And so his challenge to me, just in a very sweet, gracious way, said, you know what, if you're not cut out for this, that's fine. But he said, finish the semester. He said, at least get through the semester. And his challenge to me, which has made a huge impact on me over the years, is don't bail out in the middle of a storm. And he said, you're going through a storm right now, and you're feeling overwhelmed by Greek and Hebrew. That's fine. If you need to bail out after the semester, but get through the storm. And that advice, Phil, has helped me in so many times over the years where, whether it was leading in church or family or whatever, is just, okay, we're in the middle of a storm now. Let's not make any rash decisions in the midst of the storm. Let's get through it, and then we can make decisions down the road. And so it's amazing how people speaking into my life have made a big impact on me.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Well, thank you for sharing that. One thing you need to know about David and my relationship, David is a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan, and I'm a diehard Eagles fan. So we're just coming off of a disastrous NFL season, and you've often joked about it, and it's a fun story in the church context that we're ready to watch men's figure skating now, right?
We are. And you know, what's fun about that story, Phil, is I said that one weekend in a sermon in a gathering and said, I'm done with football. I'm going to watch men's figure skating. That day, specifically, somebody in the church happened to be on an airplane sitting behind Scott Hamilton, the Olympic gold medalist. So he relayed my comment to Scott. And so Scott shot a real quick video welcoming me to the men's figure skating world. So it's been kind of a fun thing that we've joked about over the years.
Yeah. And you've never looked back, have you?
It seems like it. No.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've been a church leader, just like you shared, for most of your professional life. And you and I have had some conversations about this, but from your perspective, what's your assessment of the current state of ministry preparation, specifically within the college and seminary context? What's working well and what isn't working so well?
Yeah. So, Phil, when I look back at my background, I see my experience at Dallas Seminary. And for those that don't know Dallas Seminary, they're very big on theology, on Bible. And so it's a four-year program. I think it's 120 hours of credits that you have to do. And I look back and think it was incredibly formative for me as far as a foundation. I feel like I can look at things biblically and I can study for myself, but I also can hear what others may say and go, ah, that's right, that's not right. And so it gave me that foundation to build off of. That's part of what Dr. Ryrie's advice to me when we were talking, he said, don't bail out until the end of the semester. Had I decided to pull out, and there were some other programs I could have pulled out and chose to follow at Dallas, I could have done a two-year more of a master's program. There are several things I could have done. By sticking with it, I feel like it gave me a real solid foundation to work off of. It also opened doors for me in that there were, as I was looking for opportunities to be a pastor in the future, I'm not sure that the church would have looked at me had I had a lesser degree. So all that to say, I think there's some great things happening, and that foundation is critical. I will say, though, too, I think there are some deficiencies. I'm not sure how to solve them, though. The deficiencies, Phil, are really more on the practical side and how to lead a church. And so we weren't taught how to lead. We weren't even taught practically how to lead a church specifically. And so you kind of have to figure that out on your own, oftentimes in painful ways. And just history of LCBC, LCBC stands for Lives Changed by Christ. And when my wife and I first went to LCBC in 1991, the church was about 150 people. We went through some really challenging first 4 or 5 years, figuring out what type of church, who we were trying to reach, those kind of things, who we were going to be as a church. Ultimately, though, 32 years later, the church had grown to 22,000 people in attendance every weekend across 19 locations. And so we had amazing experience, but we also had an experience of saying, how do we lead in levels we've never even seen before personally? And how do we do that? And I don't feel like I learned that in school.
So if you were designing it, and I know even when you were pastoring at LCBC as the senior pastor, one of the initiatives you started was actually some leadership training. But if you were pulling back, okay, we can't quite go back and change things or assess, you know, what could have been done differently. If you were designing the perfect program that would train somebody for church ministry, what would it look like?
Man, you know, I wish I knew the answer to that one, Phil. I had opportunity probably 15 years ago to go back to Dallas Seminary, speak there for a week in chapel. And Mark Bailey, the president then at the time, had sat down and talked with me previous to my going for that week and asked me what I thought of Dallas Seminary at that point in my life, asked why I didn't send more staff to be trained at Dallas Seminary. And at that point, we have a staff of 250, 270 people on our church staff. I didn't send anybody back to Dallas Seminary to be educated. And so he was saying, why have you not done that? And I said, there's several problems. One, it's a four-year program. If I send somebody there, I lose them for 4 years. They're going to be taught how to be a theologian. They're going to be taught how to be a biblical scholar, but they may not be good for me and what we need them to do here in our church. And so it's not always the education that I hope that they will receive. And then oftentimes it just changes their goals. They go off wanting to be a pastor or a professor or things like that. And so I said, it's not worth the risk for us to send them to you. And so while I was there that week speaking in chapel, he also had me then speak to all of the professors over a lunch one day and ask me that question. I said, well, do you really want me to answer that? And I said, you know, it just oftentimes it messes up the person because their just focus changes and they begin to think that the most important thing in the world is their education and what they're learning in their education, which is very important, but it may not always serve them well when they get out. And so there's a frustration there. So you asked me the question though, Phil, what's the perfect system? And I don't know. The challenge is, my experience at least, is oftentimes if it's in a college environment, then people in their late teens, early 20s, even in a seminary environment, you're in your early mid 20s, you don't know what you don't know. You don't know the questions to ask. And so somebody could have taught me leadership principles then. It might have just gone in one ear and out the other because I didn't know I needed them. And so I don't know if it's the kind of thing that needs to be more on the job training as opposed to here's a lot of things we can do for you in advance. I don't know. And I don't want to take away, I think there's a danger in taking away from that foundation that was so important for me. And so at least when I got out, I had a foundation that I could build leadership principles on. Whereas had they just taught me leadership, I might not have had the foundation. I might not have even been listening to the leadership principles. So then I would have gotten out with nothing. So I don't know what the answer is, to be honest with you.
Biblical Higher Ed Talk is sponsored by ABHE, the Association for Biblical Higher Education. At ABHE, bringing the love and light of Christ to the world is reflected in our drive to see our member institutions flourish, leading them to a time of success for their institution and giving them the tools and insights they need to look toward the future. Interested in learning more about membership with ABHE? Visit us at abhe.org or send us an email to membership@abhe.org. ABHE is your partner committed to advancing biblical higher education for kingdom impact. Now, back to the show.
When you look at the history of biblical or theological education, it started in the context of the church. You look at the early schools that started, Moody Bible Institute, Biola Bible Institute of Los Angeles. Those all started in a church context. And essentially, those leaders were looking around saying, the major universities or colleges of the day are not training ministry leaders, or at least the ministry leaders that we need. So therefore, the church said, we're gonna train our own leaders. And thus, Bible colleges, Bible institutes, theological education kind of started. And so I think it's kind of interesting that tie is always directly with the church. And over time, and I've spoken about this, that there's a tension between the college scholarship and the church. And unless we're intentionally pushing those pieces back together again, they're going to naturally move away from each other for whatever reason. And I think part of the solution is saying, how do we intentionally weave church leadership experiences into the content, the classroom side of it? And I'm not sure we've totally figured that out. You know, schools will require internships or practicums, which are good. Those are some of the practical experiences. But I think the solution may have to be a little bit more beyond that, because the experiences have to happen over time. Just like you expressed, there are things that you learned in leadership that the seminary where you went, they might have taught you those things, but you were clueless,
right, exactly,
because you didn't have the experience with it, right?
So, Phil, even as I think back, when I was early years of seminary, the professors that I looked up to were the language guys, because I was struggling with language. I was having to learn it. That was my whole world for those first two or three years. And I thought, oh, they hung the moon. Now that I'm out, or once I got out, and it didn't take long, a couple of years out, I wished that I would have listened more to those that had ministry experience, because so often the guys teaching the languages, they'd never led a church and they hadn't really been in the environment that I was now in. And so they couldn't help me. And the funny thing is, in school, the ministry guys, you'd go, oh, they're the lightweights. They're the ministry guys. They're not the true scholars. And yet once you're out, you think, oh, I wish I would have listened to them more and sat under their teaching more, because they could have been a huge help for me. So,
yeah. Some of it too could be stating expectations and managing expectations that, you know, somebody's not going to go to a Bible college or a seminary and, you know, the month after they graduate, step directly into a leadership position and just absolutely flourish and know everything. They need those experiences. So maybe it's adjusting the expectation to say, okay, we'll prepare you for the fundamentals. You will be able to take that next step, but recognize the fact that there's a whole lot of growth that needs to happen after that, that everything that you need isn't encapsulated in the entire educational experience and boom, you're ready to go and ready to lead. It's almost like we need to set the expectation that, no, we'll give you some of those fundamentals to get going, but some of it is on you to then have those experiences.
I think that's real true, Phil. And, you know, you talked about internships or some of the practicum things that schools would require. And our experience at LCBC with students coming to serve simply so they can fulfill their requirements, we were frustrated. I think they were frustrated because they weren't committed to the church the way we wanted them to be committed. They weren't committed to the ministry that they were involved in. They were just trying to do what they needed to do to fulfill the requirements of their courses or of their education. And so we ended up being frustrated with it. So, you know, ultimately we went away from that and we developed an internship program. Now it's a two-year program we call Develop. And what we decided is we can teach the Bible, the theology that most of the staff need ourselves, and we can do that over a two-year period, and we can give them the very practical experiences they need from a leadership standpoint. And so the only time typically, and I don't know if this is good or bad, but the time that we typically will ask somebody to go get trained theologically or biblically is if they're going to be one of our teachers. So they may be teaching in the main auditorium and part of our teaching team, or if there's somebody leading student ministry and they're teaching on a regular basis, then we want them to make sure that they really have real solid theological background and biblical background. But beyond that, we're hiring people out of the business world because they already have that sense of leadership and we can watch them lead. And so we'll hire them to come in and they'll say, we'll teach you the theology and Bible you need. I don't know if that's the right way to go or not, but that's kind of the direction we've gone and drifted.
Well, and you can't help but make the observation that that's how biblical higher education started in the first place, was churches looking around saying, we need to train our own leaders. And that's potentially some of the solution. I think for our colleges and universities, I think it's an opportunity to build similar kinds of relationships that saying, instead of saying we're the experts and know what to do, we're here to serve. How can we strengthen your hand in ministry within the context of the church? So, well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your current ministry assignment. You've recently assumed the leadership of the Global Leadership Network. How's it going?
Yeah, so Phil, I'm enjoying it very much. I've been involved in the Global Leadership Network as a participant for about 30 years. I've been on the board for about 5 or 6 years. And when we went through a leadership transition, the board began to talk to me about stepping into that role. It was after I had already stepped out of my role as senior pastor at LCBC Church. And I didn't feel like I was finished. I wasn't ready to retire at that point, but I didn't know what the next thing was going to be. And so we started some things at LCBC where I work with pastors throughout the Pennsylvania area but felt like there was more that I could do. And my wife, Ruth, is a very gracious, very sweet person. But probably about 3 months into my transition away from LCBC, one day she just looked at me and said, "You need to find something else to lead." And then she kind of said, "And it's not me," meaning I must have been giving her more advice around the house than she was looking for. And so almost like, get out of here.
Go. I can't imagine. I can't imagine you doing that, David.
And she would tell you with something minor, like how to arrange the dishes in the dishwasher or something, that she's like, "You know, I've been doing this for plenty of time. I don't need your direction now." So stepping into the role of GLN, I love it. What's been fun for me is I very much enjoy leadership and training leaders and teaching leaders, being around leaders. And so it gives me that opportunity to do that. And part of what I love about the Global Leadership Network, and you mentioned earlier, the biggest thing we do is what we call the Leadership Summit. And it's a 2-day event every August, the second week of August. And we have opportunity in those 2 days to train about 300,000 people around the world. And so we actually are in 110 different countries, translated into about 50 or 60 different languages. But it gives opportunity to raise the leadership lid of pastors, people in their congregation, and the volunteers and people that are serving in the church, but then also business community as well. And so it's just fun to see the business leaders that take part in the Global Leadership Summit and how it's impacting them. All of it for the purpose, ultimately, of at some point pointing people to Jesus Christ. And so one of the things the board said, even as I came on to the GLN, was we're not looking to do leadership just for the sake of leadership. And if all we are is a leadership conference, there are others out there that are doing that. But if this is a leadership conference that will at some point eventually lead people to Jesus, that's what we're excited about. And so I'm loving doing what I'm doing.
So because the summit is such a big part of what GLN does, maybe share a little bit, what are the other aspects that perhaps the general public doesn't know about that the GLN
does? Yeah, so we talk about going real big, which is the summit itself. Like I said, there are 300,000 people that participate in that. But then on an ongoing basis, we take all of the summit talks over the last 15, 20 years, and we're breaking them down now into about 10-minute snippets where, and then we'll create discussion questions to go with those snippets. And so we put those out on a regular basis where you as a leader could go to what we call Team 365 and just kind of plug and play, where you can talk and you can actually research if you want the biblical principle or the leadership principle that you want to teach. And there'll be a 10-minute talk on that, discussion questions, and it's a way to train your team or yourself personally, but your team as well. So we do that. The summit is going on around the world pretty much all year long. And so we're known for one thing. You know, what I'll joke about, Phil, is when I was a pastor, people would just kind of say to you, "Oh, you work one day a week. You only work on Sundays," or in our case, Saturdays and Sundays. And that was kind of what they assumed pastors would do. And so now that I've stepped into this role, everybody knows us for that 1 year event. So like, "Oh, so you work 2 days a year and then you don't really do anything the rest of the year." And so it's not gotten better for me as far as people's perception of how hard I work. But we do a lot all through the year. And then a lot of it's just developing relationships with leaders, because we pull our faculty for the summit from the business world. We pull it from the church world, education world as well. And so it's constantly developing relationships, vetting potential speakers for the future.
Oh, yeah. And connecting it to some of the conversation we had before this about, you know, leadership training for ministry. I think it's what GLN is providing is that opportunity for continued growth in leadership. Education is not one point in time, and I've learned it all, and now I need to go and apply. It's stuff that I'm learning over time. And I know it's a valuable resource for many people, has been for me personally through the years as I've had opportunity to attend.
Well, Phil, even as I listen to people and what they're looking for in leadership training, some people want very practical, tell me how. So even in the church world, they'll say, "Tell me how to do student ministry. Tell me how." That's the kind of leadership training they're looking for. "Tell me how to do kid ministry." And they're wanting very specific, practical things that way. The summit doesn't do that so much. The summit just says, "Okay, you're a leader. You have influence. Now let's talk about, on a broader scale, but even very specific things, how you think mentally or how you treat other people as a leader." It's broader from the context of anybody that's in a leadership position. This is how you need to be thinking, how you need to be working through different things. And so it's been helpful that way and fun to see. And what churches are always looking for, which is actually interesting as we're talking about how colleges and universities are helping with this, what pastors, every pastor, if you sit down with them for 30 minutes, at some point, they're going to talk about the lack of leaders in their church. And there's this mythical leadership pipeline that everybody dreams about. And almost as though somehow, if you can find that pipeline, you'll just have constant flow of leaders that are ready to lead and step into any environment. And I call it more of a mythical pipeline because I don't think it's there. But you can do things to prepare people. So you've got a pool of people to draw on to lead in your church. And what pastors constantly say, and I think it's true, is you have the people. God's already given you the people in your church that need to do the work of the church, but you may need to train them and prepare them. And oftentimes we don't do that training or preparation.
Yeah. 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 One thought that just came to my mind as you're talking and connecting it to the previous conversation that we had, there's something in higher education. It's been around for a little bit, but it's definitely coming back. And that's competency-based education, where essentially what that's doing is not treating everybody like they're all at the same starting point. And essentially, they demonstrate whether they've met certain competencies along the way. And if you have that in your experience, why spend more time learning about the thing that you've already learned? What are my deficiencies? And what are the areas that I do need? And in order to, quote unquote, pass or to move forward, you have to demonstrate competency. I think that could be a good approach, you know, within theological education to say, okay, it's not so much about the knowledge, it's about the applied knowledge and assessing them on, did you demonstrate humility? Did you demonstrate the capacity to preach? Did you demonstrate good leadership? And maybe that's an approach that could help, because there's a lot of what GLN is that's about that as well, where people are coming in and wanting very specific training in certain areas.
And Phil, so much of it is just practical experience. And so what was real pivotal for me as a leader, my dad was a pastor in a small church. And so my mom led kid ministry. My mom led middle school ministry when I was a middle schooler. And so I can remember being at church, she'd have me setting up everything for whatever program she had come up with for that weekend. And she would have me leading different aspects. So from the time I was seventh grade, I was sweeping floors, probably way before that. I remember it in seventh grade, but I was sweeping floors. I was planning what's the program going to be. And we only had 6 or 10 kids, so it wasn't a big deal. But in my mind, as a kid, it was. And so it taught me how to organize. It taught me how to lead. And then just continued doing that. And I think so often we'll send people through education, never having led anything. And then all of a sudden they're thrown into a church environment where they're expected to lead and be successful. They've not led anything yet. So.
As you vision going back to GLN, I know that you've been quote unquote on the job for the last several months and you've had an opportunity to meet with your team and build a sense of synergy. What's the vision? Can you pull back the curtain a little bit and share with us GLN? What does the next 5 to 10 years look
like? Yeah, so very specifically, it's very clear for us, we want to be a tool for pastors. And so we're not just a leadership conference that's out there for just everybody, though everybody can come and learn from it. But we want this to be a tool for pastors. So the pastor can come in, they can grow personally in their leadership skills, but then it also gives them an environment where anybody in their church that's involved in leadership or has influence, they can come to the summit, they can increase their leadership capacity as well. And then beyond that, even people from the community. So part of what I loved as a pastor was to have business leaders step into our church that would never, ever come to a church environment. But because they're going to come and they're going to hear world-class teaching in leadership principles, they'll come for that. And so it opens the door then for conversations about Christ that we may not be able to have out in the business community. I also love that then it sends all of our church people out into the business community, and they've got leadership skills that they picked up from the summit, they picked up because of serving at LCBC, that puts them ahead of a lot of people in the business world. And I was just filling an environment last week with a group of pastors, and one of the men in our church was there with me. He's actually on the elder board now. And his comment to that group was, he said, and this is a person that was a medical doctor, he's a leadership consultant now. And he said, I learned more coming on the board of being a part of the leadership structure at LCBC. I learned more about leadership in that environment that I did in any of my education and all the medical work that I've done for 30 years, even as a leadership consultant. I learned more in the church than I did anywhere else. And I love that I think the church ought to be leading in many different ways, but even how to structure, how to lead, I think that's important. So
sure is. And it shouldn't come to a surprise to us that that's the case, that I mean, ultimately, Jesus was the perfect example of leadership and what it means to be a leader. This is his church. It ought to be the epicenter of leadership training and effective making a difference, not only in the context of the church, but the communities in which the churches are in.
Yeah. Hey, Phil, one other.
We're down to,
can I just say one other thought that I had as I thought back in preparation for your conversation with me this morning, I thought through what practical kind of classes did I have in seminary? And all I can remember, and there probably were more, but all I can remember is a class, and we all looked forward to this class because we all wanted to know, but it was, how do I do baptisms? How do I do weddings? How do I do funerals? And so it was real helpful that way. And I still have notes that I'll pull back from time to time from that class. And to be honest with you, that's probably the only class that I pull back notes from, even though I have all my notes from 40 years ago. As I thought about that class, though, there are things that pastors need, and you're thrown out into the world, just how to plan a meeting and how to organize a meeting and how to get conversation in a meeting context, or how to read a balance sheet, a financial statement. And guys come out of school, and unless you were a business major, you don't even know how to read a financial statement or to create a business plan. And so there's some real simple things that way. Again, the problem is when you're in seminary, you don't know that you need these things. So I'm not sure you listen, but I think you would go back to your notes and say, okay, I remember one time they taught me how to read a financial statement. How do I do that? Because that's the kind of stuff that it's not the Bible. It's not the theology. When I watch churches blow up or when I watch pastors blow up, it's not because of theology or just their lack of proper interpretation of scripture. That may be every once in a while, but that's the minority. What blows them up is relational issues. They don't know how to lead a meeting, or they'll be too domineering as a leader, or just all kinds of things that really are more leadership issues than they are biblical or theological issues. And so it's an important thing because that is what's destroying our churches and our leaders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so well said, David. So in the last minute that we have here, you have an audience of leaders within biblical and theological Christian higher education. What's one word of encouragement that you'd like to leave for us?
You know, first I'd say, Phil, what you're doing is incredibly important. And so I hope, in spite of maybe some of the criticisms towards higher education, I hope that it was heard as we started our conversation that the foundation that I received at Dallas Seminary for myself was incredibly valuable, and that was necessary. And I think that's what kept me from going off the rails over the last 30 or 40 years, is that I had that sound foundation that helped me. And so what you're doing is incredibly important. I think the challenge that I would give is that just realize you're sending people out into a world where they're not going to be talking about the things that you think are always most important. When I stepped away from Dallas, I grew up in Dallas, Phil. I lived in Dallas for 10 years after seminary. And if you were around the Dallas churches, you thought the most important thing that everybody in the world was talking about was pre-trib, pre-tribulationalist, post-trib. It was all about eschatological discussions. Once I stepped away from Dallas, nobody asked me that anymore. And those weren't the conversations I was having. And so I guess I would just challenge those that are in the education world, just realize the conversations you're having in education, they're probably important, but they're most likely not what people are asking outside of your walls of your institution. And so just help your students have a dose of reality, not just what you're talking about in educational circles.
Yeah, great. Well, David, I appreciate your time, appreciate your wisdom. I appreciate your friendship and the way you've poured into my life through good grief. I can't even say the number of years because I think it's over 30
over
years.
Over 30 years, yeah.
Surely can't
be the case. You were one of the first
case.
Ones at LCBC. So yeah, it's you and Amy were important in the life of our church.
Yeah. Yeah. It just a couple of years ago. So David, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. And until next time, stay kingdom focused.
Thanks for listening to Biblical Higher Ed Talk. For more, follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. We're delighted that you chose to spend a part of your day with us and encourage you to reach out to us with feedback, topics, or guests for the show. You can get in touch with Philip, your host, via LinkedIn or at biblicalhigheredtalk@abhe.org. Biblical Higher Ed Talk is a production of the Association for Biblical Higher Education in association with Westport Studios. Views expressed on this show are those of the participants and may not reflect the views of ABHE or Westport Studios. Bring light and life to your biblical higher educational organization by inquiring about membership with ABHE at abhe.org. We'll catch you next time.